The VGRG Gaming Podcast, episode 548, recorded on September 23rd, 2019.
Welcome to the 548th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 381st episode of Video Game Roundtable. I'm TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So, today is the first day of the fall, which is why it was a sweltering, humid 85 degrees in New York. I sweated like nothing else. It's supposed to get cooler in the fall, not hotter.
It sounds like Florida as well, very sweltering.
Yeah, but you're closer to the equator.
I know.
We're still getting about 108 degree temperatures here in Texas.
Yeah, you're in Texas, so that doesn't count either.
Why does it not count? I mean,
it's not a coastal city, is it?
No, but at the same time, usually around this time we start to cool down, but like summer is running unusually long.
Well, here's the thing, is that the changing weather patterns, New York will be warm until November, and then the Arctic will just slam us. Actually, it'll slam all the United States.
I'm ready for a cold winter.
I'm not.
Me too.
I prefer hot, okay? I'd rather wear less than
cold.
More. Yeah, well, I've never seen anybody get frostbite in heat.
Oh, you could get heat exhaustion, Jonah.
Or sunburn.
Yep. So, yeah, the sun can kill you just as easily as the cold can.
Yeah, but at least you don't have to wear as many clothes.
But I want to wear clothes. With the heat, you can't escape the heat. It's like you take off clothes until you're naked, and then you're still sweating and dripping. Whereas with the cold, you could put on a jacket, you could have some hot cocoa,
yeah,
by the fire.
Yeah, I dare you to be naked in the cold, though.
I'm actually a fan of heat. I'd rather be too hot than too cold, but I'm just over summer. It's too long. Give me next season already.
Yeah.
I want summer to keep going. That's why I enjoyed living in LA. Although in LA last year it actually dropped to like 38. So that was annoying.
I'm tired of watching the same season every day. It's too many reruns.
Anyway, there's a lot going on because it's summer. You know, things are starting to come out. A lot of big games coming out, and you know, I don't know if I can catch up with all of them.
Well, Zelda's Link Awakening has come out. I haven't gotten it yet, but it has come out.
A lot of people like it. A lot of people are meh about it.
That's fine.
It's not. Here's the thing. It's not a Link to the Past. It's not nearly.
I didn't expect it to be.
People who are stuck on Link to the Past, I mean, Link's Awakening is good on its own. It's very different. It was the first that Capcom made Zelda games.
I thought that was the point. They made it kind of clear that this was not a battle against Ganon, save Zelda. This was a different journey, and I haven't played it at all, and I look forward to experiencing a different story that isn't going to be fight Ganon, save Zelda, you know, formula.
Anyway, but the thing is that there's, you know, Borderlands 3 just came out, and I don't care because I don't like Borderlands.
5 million people do, though. 5 million.
Yeah, I know. They're bragging about the number of people who purchased it. There are some interesting games that have come out which have become big hits. Like, did anybody think a game called Untitled Goose Game would be big?
That game is adorable.
So for those of you who don't know, it's basically Hitman with a goose.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not trying to kill anybody, you're just trying to prank the farmer.
Yeah, you're trying to accomplish different weird tasks like knocking a certain hat off of a certain person or stealing a certain item from someone.
Yeah. And this is one of the games that came out in Apple Arcade, and generally people are raving about Apple Arcade.
There's a lot of good stuff in there. Hot Lava looks good. Bleak Sword looks awesome. I've heard some of my colleagues raving about some of the other games that are in there.
Yeah, they curated the shit out of that service.
Sayonara Wild Hearts. That's the one I hear about all the time.
Yeah. Hey, but there's Untitled Goose Game has a honk button. Because sometimes you have to flap your wings and honk at people.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, the entire game is basically a stealth game. The controls are very touchscreen, so when you're playing it on PC, you have to lead with the mouse cursor and press the keys. So it isn't quite as intuitive. But yeah, people have been loving that game. Blasphemous has been getting a lot of notice too. And for those who don't know Blasphemous, that's by the Game Factory, which is a Spain developer. And it's basically Castlevania, except depressing and Catholic. Remember, they're from Spain, so, you know, they know the imagery. And the game is so bleak that basically when you kill people, you're releasing them. I mean, it's a post-apocalyptic, except religious. And you know how there are people who really hope for the apocalypse because things are so bad that they feel like they just need an apocalypse. This world in Blasphemous definitely needs to be wiped clean and start over again. It is that bleak.
It is really, 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 really not a feel-good game.
Because, you know, there are people on crosses and they thank you if you kill them.
Man, and the enemy design and boss design in that game is just... Man, it's like somebody read all of the Crypt Keeper books and just like took all of them and put them into all the boss monster designs they could put into.
Yeah. And you know, it's games like this in which, you know, people complain about video games on Kickstarter and Fig, and I just point to it and say, you know, you get games like this too.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely different, and I mean it's got good gameplay, it's got good animation. It's just also super like
You know, it's for teenage boys who are mildly goth, you know, listen to Rage Against the Machine while telling their parents to get the fuck away from their room. That's who this game is for. The other game that's coming out, that's actually coming out tomorrow, is The Surge 2, which the first Surge was mediocre. There was a lot of bugs with it. And so The Surge 2 is taking that, and it's making it more organic, because The Surge was basically you against robots. This one is post-apocalyptic, but a science fiction post-apocalyptic. And it's supposed to have better controls. You, as the resident Dark Souls lover, are you going to be playing The Surge 2?
No. I mean, I'll probably wait to see what people say about it, just because The Surge 1 was so meh.
I know. This one is getting better reviews. Better thing. I mean, they learned from their mistakes,
which is good. But like, I'm gonna wait until I see exactly what I'm getting into before I jump into that one.
Yeah. And then there's Sojourn, which just came out as well. It's an artsy fartsy game, but you know how people love those kind of games sometimes. You know, it's like the Braid / Limbo / Inside sort of game.
Mm-hmm. I haven't actually seen much on that one. Like,
you haven't? Really?
No.
They promoted the fuck out of it in E3.
Huh. I haven't.
No, he has to look it up. He has to watch the trailer now. It's an artistic game. It's the one. It's a first person.
Oh yeah, this one. I'm sure I've seen it, but it just completely got by me. I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, the entire game revolves around light and shadow.
Ah.
It's interesting. Then of course they have the Ni No Kuni White Wythe Remastered, which isn't as good as Ni No Kuni 2. I mean, a lot of people like Ni No Kuni. I wasn't a fan. I mean, yeah, it had great Studio Ghibli animation, but
it was very Pokemon, the first game, and they've admitted it that they basically ripped off Pokemon. It kind of surprised me that they did that, and you know, no complaints or anything. But it's very different from the second one, where you're more freeform and you can do the battling yourself and you switch between your players. But with the Pokemon, you're really kind of depending on the creatures to win the battles for you.
Well, the big thing about it is it's coming out on PC and Switch.
That will be cool. And then like DLC or something, I don't know. But yeah, that is cool.
So yeah, like I said, it's the beginning of the crunch. Things are just coming out, you know. I mean, the other big game that came out, which has been sort of divisive, not from a gameplay standpoint, but from a thematic standpoint, has been Greedfall. It's very Mass Effect, except it's taking place in basically a different Earth. It's in a different Earth, and it's basically around the era of imperialism and colonialism. So there's a lot of uncomfortable subject matter there. They try to get away from it by having the people who are being colonialized more white. They're not entirely white, but they're also very tribal. Unfortunately, there's a lot of both sides-ing it, which, you know, is not correct. But on the other hand, you know, it's a subject that never even gets noticed, so it's nice to see that, just seeing that acknowledged.
Yeah, I haven't played it. It's another game that it's a
long game.
It's a Focus Interactive game, so it sees a lot of the same problems that you often see with Focus Interactive.
Yeah, and now I'm thinking about that game, the one that was set on Mars, Technomancer.
Mm-hmm.
But on this one, you know, here's the thing about Greedfall. It was made by a very small team, and the game is absolutely massive. They were working on this for a long, long time. So you have the quirks that a small team have with a game. It's like a team of 24 people are trying to make Mass Effect, you know?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, it works, and yeah, people are modding it.
Yeah, it's a super massively... It's absolutely gorgeous in its scope. It's super massive. I've heard people complain about, like, the characters are sort of just, like, who cares?
Yeah. A lot of it is exploration, you know, and finding out the story more than it is about the characters. I mean, there's so many factions in it, too. I mean, and you have to you know, I think maybe a better comparison would be Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines was sprawling, but it was held together with bailing, you know, with construction paper and glue. You know, it was that shot, and they didn't really have a choice in the matter. It was released early, but still. So that's the same thing with Greedfall. It's more technically better, but it still has that feel of being just finished. You can see the paint drying.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, you know, they released Final Fantasy VIII Remastered. A lot of people talk about Final Fantasy VII. They never really talk about Final Fantasy VIII.
Because Final Fantasy VIII wasn't as good?
Well, no, but... I mean, that's like saying, well, you know, I mean... Return of the Jedi wasn't as good as Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, but it's also true. Final Fantasy VIII is okay. There is a lot of issues that Final Fantasy VIII brought in with its new systems. Like, leveling up your summons is a huge pain in the ass.
I didn't have as hard as time with that. The mechanic to me was easy once you figured out that Quetzalcoatl can convert all your cards to whatever spells you want. And then you're fine. You got all those spells. And I felt like I broke the game in a way at that point, because I just had all the HP, all the attack, all everything. I just was like, oh, here's a bunch of cards, convert, you know. And I didn't care about the card game. I just got cards, made them spells, and was done.
I never got there. I never discovered that secret, so I spent a lot of time in that game grinding. It was And then there was just like that you have to, you don't actually have magic spells. You collect them from enemies. That was obnoxious.
That was annoying, but again, Quetzalcoatl was your friend.
So Quetzalcoatl is the answer to everything.
Yes.
So the games that are coming out in the next few weeks, and I'm wondering about this of you, are you going to get the new Trails in the Sky?
Trails
of Cold Steel, actually. Sorry.
Yeah, I will, yeah.
Okay, I was just wondering. The game that's coming out next week, everybody's talking about, is Code Vein. You know, don't you, TJ?
That is interesting. It's basically Dark Souls, but with vampire people.
Okay.
Vampire anime people.
Yeah, and very anime.
It's a Sega game. It's very like they went.
It's Bandai Namco.
Isn't it also Sega? I thought it was Sega. Hold on.
I don't know. Maybe I know it's Bandai Namco. Depends. Maybe it depends on what region it's being released in.
Nope, you're right. It is Bandai Namco. But the point I was going to make, either way, like it does have that sort of like style that Bandai Namco and Sega has been doing with a lot of their RPG games, where it kind of has that cell shading. It's outside of that, it's just like pretty much.
Bandai Namco also published Dark Souls, so.
Right? And I played it at Gamescom. It was very, very Dark Souls, but with like anime vampires.
But not developed by From Software.
Right.
Who was the developer for that?
It was Bandai Namco Studios.
No, the developer.
Yeah, Bandai Namco Studios.
They're also an internal studio. Well, I guess they're thinking, you know, if From Software isn't going to make a Dark Souls game, although that's not entirely true. I mean, From Software is continuing to make Dark Souls-ish games, although I know that you compared Sekiro Shadows Die Twice to Tenchu and not Dark Souls, but
yeah,
they're still doing the third-person tactical combat hack and slashers.
Nioh 2 is around the corner too. They're getting ready to announce. They're getting ready to put out a demo for it here soon, and I am all over that. The trailer popped, and oh my god, it looks fun.
I mean, the other big game that's coming out in a few weeks is The Outer Worlds, and I know a lot of people are excited about that. I don't know if they. You know, here's the thing about that, though. I don't know if they know that it's not quite the game they think it is. It's not a pure action game. It's more of a Fallout-ish action game.
Right. They've been spinning it in a way that it makes it look more like Borderlands-ish. Yeah. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's Obsidian Entertainment. You know it's going to be like RPG heavy in some way.
I wonder if this is going to be the closest we're going to come to a Fallout New Vegas 2. I mean,
I'm okay with that if that's what it is. Like, I would actually hope that this is the first. Like, I hope that Outer Worlds does well enough that Obsidian continues to get the rub from Microsoft and continues to do stuff like this.
And, of course, we have Luigi's Mansion 3 coming.
I'm looking forward to.
As an addendum, I do want to say I love Tyranny, and I love. What's the other one they did? The other isometric.
Pillars of Eternity.
Pillars of Eternity.
Yeah.
Those games are really cool. But I really want to see Obsidian flex their muscles with money behind them, and I want to see them do more stuff like Outer Worlds.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing. I wouldn't mind them making a Fallout-ish game. You know, called a post-apocalyptic game set in post-apocalyptic Las Vegas. Everything but in name. You know, I mean, hey, you know, Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 are coming to console too, you know, so you'll have more of that.
Yeah. And I mean, like, take Dragon Quest, for instance. Everybody loves Dragon Quest. It's the prototypical JRPG. But then you get things like Dragon Quest Builders, and it's like, holy shit, this is amazing. They should do more stuff like this. It's like, I love what Obsidian Entertainment does with isometrics. I just also want them to give me different flavors that are just as cool.
Speaking of Dragon Quest, you know, they're coming out with the definitive version of Dragon Quest XI for the Switch.
Yeah.
In 2 weeks, too.
That's going to be cool.
Would you get it? Do you want to play that game again? Is the question.
Actually, I could. But that might mean I can't buy other games that I haven't played. You know, so I probably shouldn't, but I would want to.
I never played Dragon Quest XI, so like that might be something I dig into.
They added more story for each character. I think I said this on a previous episode, but they added a solo chapter for each character. They go on their own little adventure so you can get more depth. The overall story is still the same, but you get a little bit more, filler, as some people would say. But you get to savor the character, learn a little bit more about them, each person. So I think that to me is worth it. And they also have more mounts that you can ride around on, including the Iron Maiden, which will make you immune to all the monsters. Or you can hide in an Iron Maiden and just, you know, walk around. So it's pretty funny. I guess.
You know, here's the thing. Death Stranding is coming out, and I'm just thinking, you know what this is going to be, right? This is just going to be Metal Gear Solid, just without the name Metal Gear Solid.
I sure hope so.
Yeah, it's going to have the same garbage story and the same garbage
dialogues. Come on.
I'm sorry. It's like me trying to play the Devil May Cry 5. It's sort of like, stop. It physically hurts me.
I'm going to enjoy it. I've seen a lot of what it has to offer, and I'm into it.
He's a psycho.
I'm ready to see Kojima spread his wings and fly away from Konami with Mads Mikkelsen and Guillermo del Toro and Norman Reedus flying on his back like Falcor through the world of a never-ending story.
You know, just ignore Death Stranding and just get Doom Eternal. You know,
I wish someone would do the same thing with Suikoden and take that away from Konami as well, because I want more Suikoden.
Oh man,
who cares about Kojima? You have Doom Eternal coming out.
I care about Kojima. Kojima-san makes good things, and I want to enjoy them.
He is very hilarious.
What you gonna get? Death Stranding or Doom Eternal?
Both if I can, but probably Death Stranding if I have to choose.
Really?
Yes.
Just because you already played Doom? What? Why?
Doom is very, very cool, and I like what they're doing with it, but. I've already talked about like what I see in Death Stranding, and like it looks like sci-fi Witcher 3 to me, and that's extremely dope, and I'm way into it.
I just, you know, they're also re-releing Neverwinter's Nights Enhanced Edition, and I'm just hoping, you know, just make the editor better, please. I want to make modules for D&D, but I bought Neverwinter Nights thinking, oh, great, I'm going to... And it was like nothing like the editor that, you know, the gold box editor version. It's like, oh, God, this sucks.
That's a shame.
Well, I mean, I'm hoping the enhanced edition for Neverwinter Nights means the editor's better. I mean, you played it, right, Scott?
No, I haven't. Actually, I played it a little bit. Not too much, but... Yeah, mostly... Sucked. Yeah, mostly Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale. I wanted, I don't know, I guess I needed people to play with or something to really enjoy Neverwinter Nights.
Okay. So what have you been playing there, TJ?
What haven't I been playing? I've been kind of on, like, a gauntlet of my library recently. I'm still chugging along in the Astral Chain. River City Girls has been taking up a little bit of my time because it's just a fun little beat 'em up, and there's so much of that world packed into that game, and it's just so many nods that I look at it like the Double Dragon references and like the River City Rampage references, and it's just fun. It's also extremely well voice acted and has a good soundtrack behind it, so that's also good. I think one of my major problems with the River City Rampage games, or games like them, is that it's always just a lot of the same thing, and it's quiet, and it's just like the same repetitive action. And the voice acting and good soundtrack help break that up, I think.
You know, they need to make the Simpsons version of that again.
It's from the same people who made Double Dragon Neon, by the way, so it's just packed full of just, like... It's packed full of personality.
But I'm just thinking, you know, I had so much fun playing The Simpsons, and I forgot the name of it. You remember the four-player beat-em-up?
It was just straight-up called The Simpsons Arcade.
Really?
Yeah.
No, well... Oh, The Simpsons, the video game, it was a completely different game, but still.
Simpsons Arcade. It was literally just called Simpsons Arcade. But beyond that, the had a beta that lasted for 2 weeks for Call of Duty Modern Warfare. So I was playing that for work, and I actually got into it. I have been, like, super bored with the Call of Duty games for a long, long time because they're mostly the same. This one felt it felt actually a little bit different. It felt a little bit more impactful. It felt, like, less arcadey. I don't know if anyone here cares about shooters that much, but it was fun. If you're into those games, the new Call of Duty Modern Warfare is looking like it's actually going to be pretty fun. And then finally, I went back to Monster Hunter World for the expansion, Iceborne. And I jumped into a session. I was starting to relearn the interface of my combos because it's not easy to just like grasp right off the bat, as you know, Jonah. And God, it just two of the biggest monsters in the game just showed up in my session and beat the crap out of me for 30 minutes. And it was merciless. Like I had about 5 minutes to be like, man, this game was beautiful. Why did I leave it? And then these two bruisers showed up and just beat me mercilessly. I was like, oh, I'm still playing it and I'm still having fun and I'm trekking along and I'm moving towards the DLC and like the end game content. But like, man, it is not nice to newcomers.
You know, Middle Earth is waiting for you.
All these games and Middle Earth is sitting there in the corner staring at me like, when are you going to do it? When are you going to pick me up?
And if you want hard, you know, you can play it on Gravewalker difficulty. By the way, speaking of difficult, you know, in Death Stranding, they're going to have a very easy mode that anybody can play. It's just basically watching a movie.
Yeah, which is great. It made a whole bunch of people really angry about how like difficulty levels.
Metal Gear Solid game, though, is just watching a movie. You have to play every so often.
It's the 40-minute cutscenes without the 5 minutes of gameplay pushed in between.
I have no interest in Death Stranding, even if I had a PS4.
No.
Just beat me. I mean, maybe Suda51... At least his mental illness is more obvious and makes for a more fun experience. You know what game I haven't played yet? And that was the game that Suda51 did that was written... No, it wasn't Suda51, was it? No, it was written by James Gunn. I remember that. Back when he was a nobody. And it was about a cheerleader who had a chainsaw... her rainbow chainsaw, do you remember her?
Yes. It's one of those sort of lollipop chainsaw.
Lollipop chainsaw, right. I don't think it was Suda51. I think it was the other guy who did RE4 and... oh, damn. I know it was one of the other guys who was batshit crazy. Yeah, it was Grasshopper Manufacturer, but I'm trying to remember the name of the... damn. I forgot his name. But anyway, oh, Tara Strong actually played Juliet. I didn't realize that at the time. Now I know something. Mm-hmm. One of the ponies was Juliet in that game. Oh, it was Suda51. Okay. So yeah, it's, you know, and it's sort of, watching parts of it reminded me a little bit of Bayonetta, in that it's just batshit crazy, especially with her boyfriend's head on her hip. Yeah, anyway, so what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing Portal Knights. It is a little bit like a Minecraft adventure game where you're going around exploring various islands and opening portals to get to the next island to get other resources, fight enemies, and you have little quests to go on. It's kind of like it's another example of what Minecraft story mode maybe should have been like. You get to have classes, so you could be a fighter or a wizard or whatever, and you craft weapons and other blocks, and you can just build wherever you want to and just yeah, explore the world.
It's actually the game is actually an homage to the Zelda games, and it uses the same art style.
I was thinking it looked like Lego figures, but
yeah, no, they well, this game was out a long time ago. It was in early mm-hmm. access a long time ago, but I mean, they said it was an homage to Zelda, at least the art style. I mean, it's a lot like Minecraft. Speaking of which, I stopped playing my time at Porsche. Even though I liked where it was going, it just was one of those things in which, okay, either I spend all my time on it, like Harvest Moon, or I just cut the cord now and do it another time. And I decided to cut the cord now. So yeah, I mean, it's a fun game. If you play it, you'll instantly, you know, if you're playing something like Portal Knights or Harvest Moon or anything, because like I said, my time at Porsche has the Zelda-esque part of it in which you go into things and you fight with your sword and stuff like that. Well, I built the sword. You don't need to fight with your sword, but I built a sword. Instead, I've been playing Bus Simulator 18. It was ported to Xbox One and PS4, and it's maddening.
Have you bought your Mad Catz $200 controller deck for the game yet?
No.
I imagine they have one.
No, but you know, actually, it does have a you can actually click on the buttons on, you know, on the dashboard in front of you with your although thankfully they have a control wheel, which you can do if you use the gamepad. The maddening thing about it is that the documentation is shit. It'll tell you what you can do, but it doesn't help you at all. And sometimes, and this is another small team, like at one point it says, well, you have to build this route and then do it in a loop, go back and forth. And I did not see the option. And I had to contact the developers, and they said, oh, you have to use the ping pong option. I said, what? Yeah, one of our developers, we're going to patch it out and replace it with round trip. But he sort of thought of it as like ping pong. Yeah, that's really helpful. You know, one of your developers has fun and just calls round trip ping pong. And unless you make the connection of ping pong with round trip, you're not going to, you know. And now I'm stuck in a part in which it's telling me to make a route with all these stops, and I'm doing it, and it's not accepting it. And I'm probably supposed to be doing something else, and it's not telling me what. So, yeah. And one of the other things I don't like is that I'm driving my bus. I cross a crosswalk, and then I get information that I hit a pedestrian. But the thing is, in order for that to happen, it meant that the pedestrian had to run and smack themselves in the back of my bus. That's not fair. The person wanted suicide. It's not my fault. I mean, and it's maddening because I'm having so much fun just driving a bus and doing the routes. You know, going from one bus stop to the other, trying to make it in time, trying to make the perfect placement of the bus, having to, what's it called, you know, check people. Well, I don't even, sometimes they buy tickets, you know, it's one of those things in which, you know, you get passes, right? And sometimes if I have enough time, I'll stop the bus and I'll go to each and every passenger and check their tickets. And if I found someone who had an expired ticket, they're fined $120 and I get a green thing. You know, and you get demerits for hitting potholes or you know, hitting the curb. And that's the hardest thing is, you know, and the potholes are the worst. You know, they're not bad if you go under 30 kilometers an hour. But, you know, you're trying to get to your bus, damn it. And then you have some tricky turns that you have to do, and you know how buses are.
Yeah, so, big wide turns.
And it's one of those games, you know. And here's the other thing, too. There are two modes. There's the campaign mode, and there's a sandbox mode. And in the sandbox mode, you can never lose money. You can never, you know, everything is there. And in campaign mode, you know, you can lose money and all that stuff. And I just want something in the middle, you know. I want a mode in which I just build in a city, and I can lose money, but I'm not being told what to do, you know? I want something in the middle. That's not a complete sandbox in which everything is given to you and you don't have to worry about anything. And a sandbox and a campaign mode in which, you know, you do have to worry about that stuff, you know? This is one of those games in which I'm looking forward to the second or third iteration down the line when it's more fully featured.
No. What is...
Oh, I also don't want all the buses available to me either. You know, I want to be able to earn them.
Yeah. I assume that's what campaign mode is for.
Yeah,
but like,
the thing is, the campaign mode has you doing specific stuff. I want a sandbox mode that's the campaign mode, but you're doing what you want. And you're trying to build a business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. Maybe if I completed the campaign mode, it would open up in which you have to do that.
But you just rather have something like that from the outset.
To start, yeah. I also bought an Xbox 360 to replace the one that was destroyed. And I am playing NCAA Football 14 and earning achievements because I never played it before. So, and the difference between NCAA Football 14 and the current Madden is so stark. How a game 6 years older can be so much better. Now, here's the thing: it's not a perfect game. You know, people people have a nostalgia filter, you know, and it plays really well, but I see all the stuff that irritated me about, you know, the football games of that era, even though it has much... But they were working towards something. You know, as soon as EA abandoned the Infinity Engine and went with the stupid Frostbite for everything, and that's really destroyed their business... Because I don't know if we discussed this before, but, you know, one of the reasons why Anthem was half-baked is that EA actually pulled almost all of BioWare off Anthem to work on FIFA. Because it was using the Infinity Engine. And for those who don't know, here in the United States, you know, FIFA is gigantic. It makes Madden look like nothing. People are addicted to FIFA.
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate, like that, the FIFA Ultimate Team mode alone is enough to keep that game selling year after year after year after year.
And it's one of the few EA Sports titles that actually has competition. I mean, Konami still puts out PES football.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that they do, because it forces FIFA to actually address their problems instead of just making the same game year after year, like cough, cough, Madden.
I have heard, though, that PES has been declining in quality lately, so, you know, but it's still out there, and it's still, you know, it still exists.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, for what I've heard, PES kind of went all out on physics this last time around, so it kind of forced FIFA, and so it kind of forced FIFA to up their game when it came to the same thing.
And that's what the Madden games did, was all physics, you know, until they went with the stupid Frostbite engine.
Oh, my God.
And here's the thing. You know, Frostbite is good for Battlefield. It is not good for Dragon Age. It is not good for Anthem. Doesn't even account for third person. It doesn't account for third person at all. Or any RPG elements. It's just good for people running around on a map.
Yeah. I mean, if you've ever been on Twitter and like looked at some of the video clips that people are posting from the new Madden.
Do the glitches? Yeah,
it is crazy how some of them are playing out.
But here's the problem: people are still buying the fucking thing, dudes. If you want it to change, stop buying it. Because EA doesn't care about what you say and what videos you post. If you're buying it, they just say, oh, they don't. They care. They don't care enough not to buy it. So we'll just, you know, we don't have to worry. If you don't want them to make something, stop buying it. You'll be shocked at how fast they change things. I learned something also interesting about Dragon Age 4. Apparently, BioWare started Dragon Age 4 without EA's permission, and they just said, "Fuck it, we're gonna do what we want." And you know, so that's how Dragon Age 4 came about. They just started, EA, we're doing this. Now, if you want us to do it for you, fine. You know, they got so far ahead, far into it, it's like EA said, oh, we might as well. I mean, desperate.
Let's be honest. We do want Dragon Age 4.
Yeah.
Inquisition was good.
Inquisition sucked gameplay wise, and it was an MMO. You could tell it was going to be an MMO. It was built to be multiplayer, and they admitted such. And you can tell by the gameplay, because all the shit in it is World of Warcraft type of stuff. Go here, get X amount of this, or search for this, then come back. Wash, rinse, repeat.
I mean, compared to things like Dragon Age 2, I think that Inquisition was quite.
Dragon Age 2 did not have here's the thing. Dragon Age Origins had some of it, you know, like, but they were all side quests, like, oh, we want you to kill these mother spiders so that we can make a poison. Fine. But I could ignore that. The game would not change. Dragon Age 2 dispensed with that, basically. I mean, the most you had to deal with is you have to get this much money to bribe, the Gray Fox into giving you information. That sort of stuff, you know? And the thing about Dragon Age 2 is the combat was shit. And by shit, I mean, you have a battle, and all of a sudden, more people jump in. It was like Spider-Man on the PS4, you know? It's like, you have waves. I don't want waves. I don't want waves of enemies in an RPG. That's why, you know why I love Dragon Age Origins and Dragon Age 2? They both had the console command that would just kill everybody on the screen. I don't need that. I already played it through. Now I'm just enjoying the story. And the story...
Are you still there, Jenna?
I'm here.
Okay, it broke up for a second there for me.
Oh. The thing about Dragon Age 2 is that it's depressing. And that's fine. It's a nice depressing story. Because the entire point of that story is that things go to shit whether you like it or not, and you can't stop it.
Yeah, I suppose.
But you didn't like Dragon Age 2.
No, I didn't. Not at all. I felt it was weird compared to the rest of the series.
I still play Dragon Age Origins. I think it's the best of all of them. And not because it's the biggest and has the most scope. Although, you know, playing that game, you know, since I enjoy watching Loghain's story, since I don't kill him in Dragon Age Origins, and basically, in my run-through, Loghain, in the very end of Inquisition, becomes the leader of the Grey Wardens. Yes, I kill Hawk. I have Hawk sacrifice himself, simply because Varric is so cute when he's depressed. Varric is so often not depressed that it's nice to see him depressed once in a while. I don't know. The one thing that irritates me is that, and it irritates a lot of people, is that the team builder is not working on the website, and that irritates the fuck out of me too. Speaking of Dragon Age, is that you have the Dragon Age Keep in which you couldn't port your stuff from one to the other, even if it was always on PC, even if you only played the PC versions, you still had to do that Dragon Age Keep thing to port over stuff. That was not on the game itself. And that's what's wrong with NCAA Football 14. Team Builder, you have to do it on the website, and guess what? They shut down the website. So you can't create your own colleges. Because for whatever reason, you couldn't put it on the disc.
Yeah, that's obnoxious.
And it makes me wonder what's going to happen when they're not going to support Dragon Age Keep anymore. I don't know. Maybe they'll just keep... I have the save file, I guess. Or at least my Dragon Age Inquisition is loaded up with that save file. Oh, actually, it's not anymore, because I had to go to a laptop. Oh, dear. I don't know.
You don't have it on a cloud save?
No. They don't do it that way. It's Dragon Age Keep. It's a website. And if they shut that down, then guess what? They're not gonna save the data. Anyways, there's another game that came out, which I know that Scott had been playing the shit out of, so we're going to go to game news right now and talk about it. World of Warcraft Classic increases subscription revenue by 223% in August, and this comes from some Game Watcher. The launch of World of Warcraft Classic has, without a doubt, sparked a nostalgic flame in many players. if the QSOM server's experience weren't enough of a sign, Superdata reports that the title's launch has led to a 223% subscription revenue increase for the month of August. Despite the revenue increase, World of Warcraft Classic didn't manage to surpass the revenue brought in by the MMO's latest expansion, Battle for Azeroth, which launched last year. The two versions of World of Warcraft share the same subscription. In terms of top-grossing games on PC in August, World of Warcraft Classic came in third after Dungeon Fighter Online and Riot Games' League of Legends. Wait, you know, the thing about League of Legends is that it's a beast and it's never going to die, and, you know, you really shouldn't compare it to anything else. I mean, just ask TJ over there. TJ, do you still play League of Legends, or have you stopped?
I do, but grudging. I enjoy that game, but it's really bad for my health. Or at least my mental health.
Anyways, the launch of World of Warcraft Classic was met with lots of player enthusiasm. In its first week, queues of tens of thousands of players were reported. See, that's why I didn't log in the very first week. That's why. I'm not going to deal with that shit. Do you think I want to deal with the week one shit? No. I don't want to compete with people just to go into Goldshire and try and defeat some kobolds to get their candles and have thousands of players all... As soon as one kobold spawns, boom, he gets ganked by five people at once.
Yeah, that is a problem with having too many people on there. But, you know, there were people helping each other out, you know, joining up so they could do the quest together or just giving you a buff of some kind.
I'm a sociopath. I'm solo. I'm a hermit. I don't play with other people in World of Warcraft. Unless, of course, they need a priest, then I'm saying, okay, fine. I'm a hermit priest. This happened even with the concession of having layering, a technology borrowed from the modern version of World of Warcraft, in the first months following Classic's release. Yeah, that basically... it's not actually World of Warcraft Classic. They just had a skin over it. So that it was sort of like World of Warcraft Classic. I mean, I think they're going to release the pure World of Warcraft. So, you've been playing...
Yes, I've been playing the World of Warcraft Classic, and
how are you?
I am in Ashen Vale now. I'm like level 18. 40.
Oh, wait, yeah. Ashen Vale? Wait, you know, I'm thinking of that place with all the ghosts. That was level 40 area, level 40 to 50.
Yeah, this is.
Oh, Ashen Vale was the. Oh, was that the graveyard?
It's not a graveyard. It's a big. It's another forested area for the Darnassus elves. But I'm the human paladin. Oh. I want to get the reputation so I can get a saber cat to bite on when it gets too exalted.
Yeah, you said you wanted to get that specific. The thing about people is they just want a faction grind just so they can have a specific type of mount.
Yeah,
I know people who just grind the gnomes just to get their clockwork animals. To
oh yeah.
I don't care. I don't care. I really don't care. I ride a griffin from one place to the other. I'm fine. I haven't been playing it yet. I will at some point. Because, you know, World of Warcraft is my thing. It was my thing for a long time. I don't know if I want to get back into it. I don't want to know if... They call it World of Warcrack for a reason.
Yeah. It's definitely an addictive gameplay. I actually enjoy selling stuff at the auction house. I get materials and I sell them there.
You
make a good amount of money there.
I was always a buyer. You know, I very rarely... I mean, I did sell when I... here's the thing. Obviously, as a magic user, I always do cloth armor, you know, crafting. And I don't know if I do enchanting. I mean, enchanting sounds neat, but I found that it wasn't very useful.
I felt like there was a bunch of people that used to sit in town selling enchantments or whatever.
Yeah.
No, I mean gem cutting, that sort of thing. I guess. No, I find it better to become an alchemist and make potions.
Everybody needs a potion.
Yeah, potions very useful.
Oh, and also of course cooking, because it's useful. It is useful, but simply because I enjoy getting recipes and cooking them. And
yeah,
made a fish.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, weren't you a big fish guy?
Yeah, well, that's part of cooking. Gotta get those rare fish to make the thing that gives you a buff of stamina or will or whatever. You know, it's like, you know, you don't have to cast that spell. I just have the food here that's gonna buff you. And I don't want to be a warlock because, to me, that's cheating. It's cheating to be a warlock because you can solo easier that way. You're a man. Try and solo as a priest.
Yeah, soloing as a priest is very difficult.
Smite, shadow word, pain, smite. yeah, power word shield. And have to keep power wording shield at periodically because, you know, every time they hit you, it takes the hit points off the shield.
You also need inner fire on at all times.
Yeah, well, that's passive, no?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, I got I remember having my 60 and I got the one that not heals everybody. It does something else. And I forgot what it is. But I did have the heal everybody thing. But, you know, that was actually kind of useless. It was better just to, you know, be tethered to the tank and just keep make sure the tank stayed alive.
Yeah. Let him eat up all that aggro.
Yep. And put a Power World Shield on him. And, oh, yeah, the other thing that you must have as a priest is the thing that reduces aggro. There's one skill that reduces aggro when you heal. So that they don't decide, hey, wait a minute, that guy's healing people. It won't work with humans, but at least it works with monsters.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Grandia 1 and 2 HD remasters get October release date on PC from Eurogamer. Publisher Gung-Ho Entertainment has announced that its HD remasters of beloved JRPGs Grandia 1 and 2 will be heading to PC on the 15th of October. Additionally, a patch for the Grandia HD collection on Switch is promised for November. While Grandia 1 and 2 arrived in a single bundle on Switch, Gung-Ho will be releasing its HD remasters individually on PC. That's likely connected to the fact that a version of the second game is already available on the platform, in the form of the Grandia 2 Anniversary Edition. And this will be updated and renamed to Grandia 2 HD Remaster come the 15th of October. Both PC remasters will feature English and Japanese audio, enhanced sprites and texture art, UI improvements, widescreen support, and customizable resolutions. Grandia HD Remaster also brings Steam achievements, plus controller and keyboard support with remapping. As part of its PC release date announcement, Gung-Ho also addressed feedback and comments regarding the Grandia HD collection on Switch. The publisher says that a patch will be coming to Nintendo's console on the 12th of November. More details will be provided at a later date, and the PC release will replicate the same experience.
I love that.
Grandia is like that second tier JRPG. I mean, you have the top tier like Final Fantasy and stuff like that. Then you have on the second tier stuff like Star Ocean and Grandia. And I know a lot of people who love Grandia. What was it, on the PlayStation 1?
I played that one on PlayStation 1, and I also have Grandia 2 on Steam, so that means I'll be getting the...
Yeah, you'll be getting the update for free.
Yes,
yeah.
That'll be awesome. So I look forward to that. And I loved the first game. It was really beautiful and had a really fun story to follow. You know, you had this adventurer who just, like, that's what he wanted to be. He just wanted to be an adventurer, go explore and find new things. And I think, if I remember right, there was a huge wall he had to climb and to see what was on the other side. And it was just a really fun story.
Yeah, back in 1997.
Yep. I was trying to figure out why I never played this or even paid attention to it up until the point where, like, I played a PS2 Grandia and it wasn't very good.
Well, you know what system that Grandia first came out on, right?
It was on PlayStation and Saturn, right?
Yeah, it was first on the Saturn. The PlayStation version didn't come until, like, 2 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was only on the... Here's the thing. It was only on the Saturn in Japan, though, which is why no one remembers it being on the Saturn.
Okay.
This is one of those games that I would probably definitely give a go if I had a chance. I guess it's on Switch, so like I need to look back into this because you're right. It does seem like one of those tiers of JRPGs that are kind of like
second tier.
You know, a lot of people don't really know about Wild Arms, but that's a good series. Same thing with like I would say. Suikoden. I wouldn't say Phantasy Star is
on the top tier. I mean, maybe not here, but Jesus Christ, it's massive in Japan.
Yeah.
And, you know, well, basically, you know, most people know Phantasy Star as basically Phantasy Star Online. I mean, the RPG is, like, known and well-liked because it was a, like, the Sega thing, you know? It was their response to Final Fantasy. But Phantasy Star Online and Phantasy Star Online 2 came back here, and everybody, you know, everybody remembered the original game is, like, into it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, like, Star Ocean. I mean, Star Ocean
has a fandom, Star Ocean.
You know, but it's still second tier.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would even say that, like, to a degree, Breath of the Wild also Breath of Fire falls into that space. Just because, like, it's not one of those games that you, like, go out of your way to, that people were going out of their way to be like, they gotta get Breath of Fire. Even though Breath of Fire 4, I would say, is one of the best RPGs I've ever played. Mm-hmm. But, like, I hear people say the same things about Grandia, and it's something that I want to explore.
Oh, Fire Emblem, that's right. Fire Emblem is another tier two. I mean, people don't say it, you know, but when they when it came out on Xbox 360, people lost their shit. They went.
Fire Emblem used to be tier two. I would say that since it's been in Smash Brothers, and since they've done like the 3DS and Switch games, it's risen up in the world.
Here's a tricky one for you, which is Disgaea.
Disgaea is tier two. Fire Emblem rose up because, like, A, it got into Smash and it made people want to explore those characters. And B, Three Houses has been like Fire Emblem meets Harry Potter, and people are batshit nuts over it. Like, that game has been out for what? Coming up on a month now, I think. And I see it in my timeline every single day. People just, like, so excited about whatever they've been doing in Fire Emblem. And so I would say that it used to be, like, it was definitely always more popular in Japan. But with the last maybe 2 to 3 games, Fire Emblem has gone from tier 2 to tier 1.
Shocked that Catherine is getting another new edition, actually, to tell you the truth.
So would Dragon's Quest be tier 1 or 2? Because
Dragon's
it's still...
Quest is friggin' number 1, and it, here's the thing. It is miles beyond everything else, especially in Japan. You have... When there's a new Dragon Quest released in Japan, it's a national holiday.
I would have to agree with that.
Holiday. It is bigger than Pokemon. It is bigger than Final Fantasy. It is bigger than anything in Japan, Dragon Quest.
The only Final Fantasy it's not bigger than is Final Fantasy VII, but like Dragon.
That's by reputation, and you know, and by no, I mean when a new Final Fantasy comes out, even at the time, you know, I mean people, you know, talk up, you know, Final Fantasy VII, but that's just like because it was Final Fantasy. It's like one episode of the series. Dragon Quest, everything about that series is like up, you know, stratospheric in Japan. It may not be here. I think a lot of the fame for it comes here, almost out of osmosis, you know?
It was a lot out of the fact that people just, like, had to go through different weird ways to port it over here.
It was, I mean, you know, when I was growing up, I got to play Dragon's Quest 1 through 4 on the NES.
But here, it isn't as big as, say, Zelda.
Right.
But in Japan, Dragon Quest eats Zelda for lunch.
I would say
they have stores full of Dragon Quest merch.
Yeah, Dragon Quest is a traditional JRPG like Final Fantasy in a world where Final Fantasy is doing all sorts of things that aren't Final Fantasy anymore.
You know, here's the thing: Dragon Quest in Japan is what Ultima should have been here. And you know, the problem is that we had Ultima 9, and that just killed it. Ultima 9 could have been the United States' Dragon Quest. Because here's the thing. Ultima 3 was ported to the NES as Ultima, just regular Ultima, and it kicked off the JRPGs. All JRPGs are born from Ultima. They all spread out like a plant, you know. What's it called? Ultima was basically the go-to of you know, the go-to way of doing a JRPG.
I think I played several JRPGs before Ultima came around.
But Ultima was so big and so influential in Japan that everything just, you know, it's sort of like Bambi for their animation. You can look at you know, anime now and say it doesn't look anything like Bambi, but Bambi was the inspiration for a lot of anime. I'm just saying, you know, Ultima basically set the form and function of how to do a JRPG, and they just went for that. Look at any NES Ultima screenshots. You'll say, oh, I get it.
That's what makes the ports for Dragon Quest 1-3-3 so tragic, because there are a lot of people that want to play those games. I want to play Dragon Quest 3. I've never played Dragon Quest 3, but I hear good things about it all the time.
Dragon Quest 3 is very good. And, like, well, I wouldn't want to spoil you then on that one, but it's very good story. It's actually a prequel to the first game. And, so there's a bit of a twist there. But yeah.
And that's what breaks my heart about, like, the bad porting, because I don't want to play a subpar, crappy experience of Dragon Quest III. I want to play a good one.
You know, what could have been a big title, but it never survived the 90s, and that's the Chrono series. The Chrono series could have been huge, but the last one was in 1999.
The reason for that is that the director has no interest in forcing a sequel.
Yeah,
because you play that game Chrono Trigger, and there really doesn't need to be a sequel. I mean, there's like,
oh, there was Chrono Cross. That was
like, how
sequel.
Can you do a sequel?
They did Chrono a sequel. Yeah. Chrono Cross.
Chrono Cross, and that was a parallel dimension one. And
the only link between the two is Luca appears in Chrono Cross.
Well, that's the same thing with Final Fantasy. Here's a question for you. Okay, let's see if you can answer this one. Which tier is the Tails series? I would say it's borderline one. Borderline one?
Yeah, I would say it's not in the one spot. Like, Tales of Destiny, I love those games. Tales of Destiny and Tales of Phantasia are super fun. But I would say that they're on the same level as, like, Star Ocean, where, like, they've gone through so many changes and iterations that it's, like, it doesn't really have an identity outside of having Tales in the name anymore.
Actually, in one of the things that may go up in popularity, because, you know, they're releasing it for everything now. They're releasing it for PC and Xbox and everything. So, you know, they're going for it. And then you have the redheaded stepchildren, Xenoblade Chronicles and Valkyria Chronicles.
God, I wish Squaresoft would get back the rights to Xenogears and make a proper HD version of that game. Because that I would buy day one on every system I have and play the shit out of it. I love that game. I love that game more than I love most games. Xenogears is easily...
I thought you were
easily... going to
say more. I love that game more than I love my mother or something.
I don't know. It was pretty influential. I would put them versus each other. I have an infatuation with Xenogears that is beyond most of the games I've ever played, and it came to me at a time in my life that it just, like, there are certain games in my life that are, like, the games that created my entire sensibilities as they are now. One of them is Shining Force, and and another of them is Xenogears.
And you have Dark Cloud. Nobody talks about Dark Cloud anymore.
Oh, Dark Cloud was fun. I'm enjoying Dark Cloud 2. That's different from the first game.
Yeah, but that game had a strange history.
Seems like it, yeah. I just wanted to agree with TJ about Xenogears, because I think it had a very fun battle mechanic where you didn't just hit X button to do an attack. You had to do combination moves, and that was actually fun.
And you actually, like, go through the game putting in the inputs for those combination moves in order to learn the new moves. Mm-hmm. It's so cool the way they set it up. Also, it's just like a straight up martial arts RPG, which is just fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm gonna create a third tier, and the third tier is for games you really don't think of as JRPGs, even though they are. But they have there's certain things about them that just make you not really think of them as RPGs. Because I'm thinking about the Super Mario RPGs, you know, and Professor Layton. Because those are technically JRPGs, even though they don't feel like them.
Yeah.
Well, Layton feels like a puzzle game, but...
Well, that's just it, but it's still an RPG, though.
Sort of.
Yeah.
It has a story, it has a path you follow. It definitely is, like, in certain ways, an RPG, but it's just, like, you move forward by solving puzzles.
And Ace Attorney, you know.
Well, those fall into, like, I would argue that those fall into the more of a visual novel.
Adventure game. No. I know what you're trying to say, but I'm not going to say they're adventure games. I mean,
not adventure
RPG
games. Visual novels. They're just extremely intricate visual novels.
No, because you can't masturbate to them unless you're really Professor Layton.
If you're masturbating to Doki Doki Panic, then you have a problem.
or Doki Doki Literature Club, then you really have a problem.
Yeah.
So anyways, you know. So, yeah, Grandia is coming to PC and Switch. Oh, it already came to Switch, but it's getting an update on Switch.
Yes.
So I will take the last one. Sorry, Scott. Next Batman Arkham game being teased, and this comes to us from Game Watcher. The Twitter account of Batman Arkham Origins developer WB Montreal has suddenly tweeted its first post in 4 years, and it seems to be teasing the studio's long-rumored next Batman Arkham game, something that's been happening a lot recently. The tweet shows a video of the bat signal projected onto the side of a building, which was done as part of Batman Day celebration. However, watching the video closely, it's possible to spot four suspicious symbols, and two of those symbols seem to be pointing towards the return of the Batman villain Ra's al Ghul and the League of Assassins. The news of the next Batman Arkham game is heating up further, as the original rumor of the Court of Owls got a boost, thanks to the comics creator Scott Snyder, who tweeted a since-deleted reply to the WB Montreal post, where he teases the inclusion of the court in the game. The official WB Montreal has tweeted another tease for the Batman Arkham game, this time with a clearer look at the four symbols from the previous tweet. One of them looks like an owl from the side, and the words "Capture the Night" are even more clearly Batman related, and maybe the game's tagline. Sony is expected to reveal more tomorrow, which will be September 24th. I'd like to be excited, but I'm not. After Arkham Knight, no.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, plus, they already did Ra's al Ghul.
He was in Arkham Origin City. He was in City.
Yes.
Remember, he was the one who was backing Hugo Strange, and he kills Hugo Strange, and then you impale him.
Yes, but he comes back because Lazarus.
Of course, he comes back to Lazarus, but of course.
So I don't know. Court of Owls. I don't know much. I don't know enough about Batman lore to like be excited for Court of Owls.
It will excite me. Is if the fucking Joker is not in the fucking game. Thank you. I've had enough of the Joker. They had to bring him back after they killed him. First with a prequel, and then with a ghost.
Ra's al Ghul is going to pull off his mask and he's going to be the Joker.
No.
I have to agree with Joan on this. I'm so done with the Joker. I don't want to see him anymore. I don't care. This character is just... I'm just done.
And you know, the thing is that the Court of Owls is, you know, relatively recent. I think it was like, what, introduced in 1999, 2000, something like that? For those who don't know, the Court of Owls is Batman Elite, Gotham Elite Society, and they put on owl masks. And the thing about the Court of about Owls is that owls eat bats. So, there's that. And they're a secret council, they're sort of like a star chamber. And, you know, it's just something that's interesting, you know. It's, you know how Hush is like the flip side of Bruce Wayne, the guy who becomes Hush? Well, this is basically him times 100. And they did hint at the Court of Owls in the Batman games, in the Batman Telltale games. Do you remember in the first game, this woman was talking to you, and they were talking about how Gotham's the lead and all this and that. Sort of basically obliquely referring to the Court of Owls without actually talking about them. So, and basically, the Court of Owls retconned the idea that they actually ordered the hit on Thomas and Martha Wayne. So, I mean, because he was going to expose the court.
So there's a little bit of retconning on the original lore.
Yeah, but that was a while ago. I mean, you know. I mean, here's the thing about well, that's in the Gotham show, just so you know. The Court of Owls. Anyway, it's just Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo came up with it just to fuck with everybody's heads about what Gotham is really like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having a secret society of rich people. By the way, the masks are really creepy if you ever see them. Oh yeah, they invented them in 2006, so it's actually kind of recent. Like I said, something new, you know? And we've seen most of the Batman gallery, we've seen Bane, we've seen Poison Ivy, we've seen the Joker, we've seen, you know, the Court of Owls is something we haven't seen in that game.
Yeah. It's true. I just don't know, like I said, I don't know enough about it to have an opinion one way or the other. By what you say, it sounds like if you've been following Gotham, maybe you'll be interested in this.
Well, Gotham incorporated it, but it was actually from 2006 before Gotham. It's just that the idea of the Court of Owls worked so well for a Batman prequel that they just had to include it. Like I said, it's something that hasn't been seen much. I mean, Ra's al Ghul is relatively recent, too. He was invented in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Bane was invented in the 90s. You know, the Court of Owls is something new, and it's, you know, would be, if they wanted to impress me, they'd include Gotham and Gotham Girl. You know, they haven't included, I just realized, they have not included Kathy Kane yet in those games, have they?
I was going to say, it would be interesting for them to bring in
Batwoman.
Batwoman. And also,
the show is coming out, so who knows, she might be in it simply as a tie-in.
Yes. By that standard, I hope that they don't have Joker show up and then it's like Joaquin Phoenix.
You know what I'd like to see more of, and that is all the Robins. You know, just as Robins, you know, and screw the Red Hood. I'm tired of Jason. But Jason was the Arkham Knight.
I was going to say, didn't they have Jason, and then they also had Nightwing, and then they also had Tim Drake in Origins?
Skins. Not in Origins. In Arkham Knight. Yeah, they had you playing as Jason. They also had you playing as Harley in DLC as well. And what's interesting is that when you're playing as Harley, the sane Harley is your inner voice, you know, telling you to stop being so crazy. That was enjoyable in that thing. But yeah, I mean, you played as Robin, but it wasn't part of the game. It was just part of a side mission. Or at least Jason Todd, you know. Hopefully they also ditch the Batmobile. Fuck the Batmobile. If I wanted to get around, I'd rather glide around on my wings. And the Batmobile was so useless that they had to invent a mechanic in Arkham Knight just to make it useful. And also be part of some puzzles. And to be part of the stupidest Riddler, what's it called? Yeah, the Riddler wants to see how smart Batman is by making him race! Because, as we all know, NASCAR racers are the smartest people on Earth.
Yeah.
And where's... Even in the first game, where the fuck was the Riddler getting all this money to do this shit? Even in the first game. The first game, maybe, because all it was were these little, you know, green glowing question marks placed all over the place. But by Arkham City? Where do you get the contractors for all that crap?
The Riddler is the MacGyver. He's the MacGyver of puzzles. He makes
it. It's not MacGyvering. It's like money. And then he had to build racetracks for Arkham Knight. That was just bizarre.
Yeah.
Here's what I want. I want a more condensed Batman Arkham, you know, so that it's less open world, more streamlined, so that the Predator missions can feel like Predator missions again. Because the Predator missions are good because they're enclosed. You have to use the space. In Arkham Knight, you could go anywhere. You could be 5 million miles away from them and take them out.
Yeah, I would say that Arkham City was like the appropriate amount of open world. Where
it was
like
too
you had
open world, even for me, I didn't like it.
Really, I thought it was well and good how they condensed it into like each villain has their hideout, and the hideout itself is that way.
Nah. I mean, look at Resident Evil 2. Almost the entire game takes place in one police station.
Yes,
and you get to know that police station.
And Arkham Asylum is the same way, where, like, you get to know everything about it.
See, that's what I would like, is for a horror game to take place in one three-story house. Actually, didn't Resident Evil 7 do that?
Yes, and then it moves away from that three-story house and gets ridiculous.
But still, but a lot of it, you know, you have to learn the entire, you know, the entire floor plan of that place.
Yes, and it is very cool when you're in that house. I would say that the first, like I said, I've said it before, the first two thirds of that game are excellent. The last third sucks.
And then it becomes a Resident Evil game. It becomes Resident Evil 4.
Now it becomes Resident Evil 6, which is just shit.
What, the walking turd monsters?
Yeah. Walking turd monsters and a submachine gun and basically a first-person shooter, which is like, oh my god, get the fuck out of here.
And, oh, you forgot about the trip mines and the fire bombs.
You know, I don't even mind that part a little bit because you're dealing with a psychopath that is, like, tricking you all the way. And you have no way to, like, actually go at him. And
I have to wonder, are they actually going to do a Resident Evil 8, or are they just going to remaster all the other games now?
They are getting – so, like, the new news on Resident Evil is that they're getting ready to do a new multiplayer experience, and a lot of people think it's going to be something similar to Resident Evil Outbreak.
No, it's going to be what everybody's doing now. It's going to be Left 4 Dead.
I hope not. I hope it's more like Outbreak. Outbreak was, like, interesting in the way that, like, everybody was a normal citizen. They all had their own inventory slots, but they all also had, like, a little unique feature about them that they could do. But at the same time,
the game we're talking about, by the way, it's just, people are confused. It's called Project Resistance. So
yes. It's also, you know, okay, so
okay, here's the thing. From what I'm reading, Project Resistance has 4v1 matches, so
yes, that's
please,
something that
whatever you're doing, do not make the same mistakes as Evolve.
Uh-huh. So it's looking an awful lot like there's a Wesker-esque individual who sits behind the scenes controlling somewhat of the monsters.
Yeah,
like,
you have the typical roles. You have the healer, you have the hacker, you have the melee guy, and you have the tank.
Yeah, so there's a lot of ways they could go wrong with this. I hope they make it feel like a proper, like, Resident Evil Outbreak.
Yeah, because here's the thing: what if you're playing it and you're the only person, you know, you're only one person and you're playing as the support class. Are you gonna have AI bots that you're gonna be playing with? I mean, that's what happens in Left 4 Dead 4. I mean, if it's multiplayer only, I guess no bots. But we'll see. But then you have to deal with people, you know, timing out or rage quitting and stuff like that.
Right. We'll see. I hope it's interesting.
Or maybe it's
going to
be like Dead by Daylight or Friday the 13th the series. I mean, say what you want about Friday the 13th and Dead by Daylight, but I think they launched an entirely new genre.
Friday the 13th is exactly what I would want it to be like. A bunch of clumsy people going up against a monster that's bigger than
the
them.
The tyrant, yeah.
I don't want it to be like Operation Raccoon City, where you play a crack team of fucking umbrella agents that all have their own specialty and know everything that's going on, because there's no fear in that case. It's Resident Evil. Make it scary.
Resident Evil Siege. I mean, people who played it are actually saying it's good. So.
Yeah, I hope so.
It was at TGS, so people played it.
It's interesting that they already had a playable build, because they literally announced it like maybe 2 days before TGS.
That reminds me. Did you see what E3 is talking about now? They're getting friggin' desperate.
Yeah, it sounds like they're trying to win people back, but I don't know that they can do that after what happened.
E3, you are not... You're supposed to be a trade show. The entire point of E3 was GameStop managers go there and see what they want to order for their stores. That's basically what it was. You know, and journalists went there because they could see, you know, these games in advance, and then it became this thing. And then the internet's happened, you know, and now you don't really need news anymore because news is 24/7. So
right.
Now they have to make it a show, and people always wanted to go to E3, except they didn't realize that it was a really boring experience in which you're just going to sit down. And they're having panels now and all that stuff, and it's like, no, just stop.
Gamescom felt right.
Gamescom has always been the way it is. They never had to change. It was always a fans go in one day and they have their own section.
Yes. But I also love the fact that there was just a straight up press day and there was also like a press area that was always separated from that public area.
Well, they have a press day for E3 now. It's going to be one of the 3 days.
Yeah.
And like I said, they don't want me, so I don't want them.
Go to Gamescom, it's better.
No, see, the problem with that is I'd have to fly to Germany and it's expensive.
It's only like $2,000. I'm just kidding.
Pay my way, sorry. I need to do a new desktop, crying out loud. That's going to cost $2,000 for a good one. I don't want a crappy one. I want one that's going to last for another 9 years or 10 years.
You got to start shopping for tickets and just like mark down those low prices, find them deals.
I just thought, you know, Kingdom Hearts was a tier one that turned into a tier two.
Yes, it was.
You know, are you talking about quality or popularity? Because I think some of
those tier quality.
Because I think some of those tier two games you were mentioning are better quality than just.
Oh yeah, I'm talking about. Well, here's the thing. I'm talking about
popularity,
mind share, basically. You know, I mean, if you're gonna talk to the average person, they're gonna know who Pokemon is.
Yeah.
Say, ever heard of Fire Emblem? They're gonna go, huh? I mean, they'll know who Final Fantasy is. There was a movie.
Yeah.
I just mean, you know, and I'm not talking about the average person, you know, the person off the street. I'm just talking about gamers. You know, it's sort of like, oh, did you hear there's a new Disgaea coming out? Oh, that's cool. Oh, did you hear there's a new Final Fantasy coming out? Really? Either they hate it or they love it, you know.
But they know.
Mindshare.
Yeah. Kingdom Hearts 3 was, in that case, that was that's always been a tier one. It just always hasn't been tier one in terms of quality.
You know, level 5 still wants to do a dark cloud. I mean,
that'd be fine with me. I like level 5. They do a good job.
No one wants them to make it. I mean, they're doing Professor Layton, Ni No Kuni and Dragon Quest. You'd think they'd have a little bit of clout.
Hmm.
Well, I mean, there hasn't been a new Professor Layton in a long time, so I don't.
Yeah,
they're just about to launch a new one, actually.
Well, here's the problem with Professor Layton. There's just so many variations on a puzzle that you can do. There's just so many puzzles you can make, you know?
So. There's actually, like, they actually, the guy that does the puzzles for Professor Layton is just like a straight up professor of puzzles. That's his gig.
Was it Telltale? Yeah, it was Telltale. Who did Puzzle Agent. I enjoyed that. I mean, the puzzles were easy. They were beyond easy, but I still enjoyed the story. You don't know Puzzle Agent?
No.
It takes place in Minnesota, don't you know? This agent goes up there, and there are evil garden gnomes around, and it's just, the ending is so creepy. It's just like, okay. Oh, we just got into David Lynch territory here, and it's genuinely scary at the very end. Then the sequel came out and explained everything, and it's like, oh, why'd you do that? I tried my best to forget about Puzzle Agent 2. But try Puzzle Agent. I'm pretty sure it's cheap now. Especially now that Telltale is gone. You know, Puzzle Agent is still on Steam for $5. It's worth a go. The puzzles are incredibly easy. There was only one puzzle that I actually struggled with. But it is so bizarre and has an art style. And it is so Fargo meets Professor Layton. Nelson Tethers is a Puzzle Agent. Yeah, when did that come out? That came out all the way back in 2010. So anyways. So Batman. If they want to impress me, they'll make a Justice League game. And not a fighting game like that crappy fighting game from a while back, from a long time ago.
Do you remember Injustice?
What?
Just kidding. Injustice.
No. That's, you know, Injustice is basically Crisis and Infinite Earths, right?
No, I know.
No, I mean a Justice League game in which it's an RPG and not a fighter. I think you'd have to make it an adventure game just so that, you know, you don't have overpowered people.
Me and a few other people have often talked about how you would make a Superman game, and it really...
They did it. They had the right concept a while ago in which it wasn't Superman that was getting hurt. It was Metropolis, and if Metropolis took much damage, you lost.
Yeah, I like that concept. I was on the Xbox. I'm not sure if it was 360 PS2. Or...
Yeah.
It was definitely Xbox. I remember that.
I think it was Superman Returns. I'm not sure.
And I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good Superman, and I don't know why people were shitting on it. I played it, I enjoyed it, and other people were just like, no, this is terrible, and I don't know what they were expecting them to do. I mean, just, I don't know. I was Superman, I was flying around the city, trying to protect it, and not fly into buildings.
Fighting giant robots. Yeah, it was Superman Returns.
Yeah, it was fun.
I wonder if it's backwards compatible. Well, it doesn't matter, I have my 360 back again.
I mean, you know, because it's a good point. It's like you can't really hurt Superman, so he wouldn't really have an HP meter. He would have a reputation meter, you know,
yeah.
Like how destructive is he being, how truly protective
which
is he.
Why,
so, yeah, that makes
which
sense.
Which is why you don't punch ambulances around. No, the problem with that game, if I remember correctly, was that it was really janky. Like, you know, you have to go and help people who crash in an ambulance, but sometimes the people won't pick up. You know, there's just a lot of buggy stuff in it.
I think my peak idea of what a Superman game would be is that he's immortal. Like, you can't hurt Superman, but you can hurt the city of Metropolis.
Yeah, well, that was and the entire point of Superman Returns. Although, you know, you could...
I know, but I'm talking about, like, as a game, like, basically you have, like... a system in the city where as things get destroyed and people look to Superman, they lose faith in him if he doesn't save them.
Well, there's another thing you could do, and that is just have him send him to War World. You know, where Mongul reigns, and, you know, he was there, and the creatures are on the same power level as him there, you know, the people he fought, like Draga, and you could have that game, you know. Or you could have a simple game in which Superman loses his powers and he has to slowly earn them back. You know, sort of like Superman 2, except on slow motion. So look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week. And we should have a special episode in which TJ and Scott discuss JRPGs.
That'd be cool.
I'm into it.
So, yeah, except, you know, what happens is he'll just end up talking about Guilty Gear and fighting games like that.
Oh no, I have a deep love of JRPGs. I just don't play them as much nowadays because I don't think there's many things that were as good as the old ones.
Have you played Trials in the Sky, TJ?
I've tried to jump into JRPGs a few different times, and I just don't get a feel out of them the same way I did with Xenogears. And I don't know if it's just because I've gotten older and I'm looking for different things now, but like it's just. They don't strike me the same way.
How about handheld or JRPGs?
I started to fiddle with Breath of Fire 1 in the SNES online Super Nintendo Online on Switch, and that was fun. But like, and you know what? I did enjoy Dragon Quest Builders too, so I can't say that I don't enjoy all RPGs. It's just that they really have to be something out of the ordinary to catch my attention nowadays.
The only really, 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 really traditional JRPG that I've actually enjoyed is Blue Dragon.
Yeah, I remember us talking about that one before.
Yeah. And you know, you should try. I mean, they also created a DS version of that game too. Now, you know, Microsoft is making a bunch of games for the DS, so it should shock nobody that they made games for the Switch.
I was looking at, what's it called? The something of Cold Steel, that one that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, Trials of Cold Steel.
It looked interesting. It looked like it made me think of Front Mission a little bit. But I don't know if it. But I didn't really see gameplay in there. I just saw it was like a cinematic trailer.
It's very similar to Trials in the Sky, and in fact, it's happening parallel to Trials in the Sky.
I don't know if this one out. So Polygon a couple of months ago actually did the top 10 JRPG franchises of all time. Would you like me to read them out for you?
Sure.
Okay, number 10 is Sudoku. Sudoku. That's the one you're complaining that they haven't made a new one of.
Yeah.
The last one was in 2012. Fire Emblem is number 9. They're actually, there was a new Fire Emblem came to Switch, didn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, that was the one I was talking about earlier, three houses.
Okay, number 8 is Dragon Slayer, Nihon Falcom.
Hmm.
That's an oldie. That the first one was in 1984. Then you have Mystery Dungeon, number 7.
Pokemon Mystery Dungeon?
No, this is its own Mystery Dungeon. It's actually a roguelike.
Hmm.
Number 6 is Ys.
That's a good one.
Number 5 is Mother, and most of us know Mother 3 because that's Earthbound.
Oh, yeah.
That's one, you know, that was a game that was major for a long time in Japan and just basically died off.
That game does not deserve as much love as it gets.
Here's the thing, it's very called Mother for a reason. Because
right.
the entire game revolves around your relationship with your mother and going home. But anyways.
I would say that, like, Mother is interesting for the fact that, like, no one else was doing, like, the modern age theme around a JRPG at the time. But, like,
yeah, but it was dark. It was had that really dark undercurrent to it.
Oh, yeah. It was super dark. And it had a good story. I just think that the gameplay is like...
The gameplay was awful. And that's, by the way, here's the thing. The very first thing you do in Mother 3, a.k.a. Earthbound, you bid your mother goodbye, you go out, you go to a hill, and then you come back home, and then you go to sleep.
It's super... Like, the battles are super boring. Burn.
Mm-hmm. It's a slow burn. Number 4 is Pokemons. Number 3 is Dragon Quest. Number 2 is Shin Megami Tensei, and we forgot completely about that series.
Does that include Persona, or is that just like its own thing?
I think it includes Persona, yeah. Devil Summoner.
I was just trying to remember if Persona has the Shin Megami Tensei.
They're
like
both Atlas? I'm not sure. I know it's the Devil Summoner and Devil Survivor series as well.
Right.
That belongs to that. And number 1 is Final Fantasy, and you know, no. Not anymore. I don't think so. Final Fantasy 13 sat on my head and bounced lightly on it, saying, "Are you having fun yet?"
Final Fantasy 15 was fun, and Final Fantasy 14 is carrying me.
Final Fantasy 15 wasn't Final Fantasy 15. God damn it! It was a, you know what it was, right? It was supposed to be that multiplayer game. Oh damn! Something something zero. You know what I'm talking about. Final Fantasy something zero. And they turned into Final Fantasy 15.
But it was still good. I will stand
by
that.
Oh, it's Type-0 HD, that's right.
It is straight up fun. It is Stand By Me, the Final Fantasy game. The boys go to find a corpse, and they find adventure and friendship along the way.
I just want to smack him upside the head and tell him to stop moping.
And Final Fantasy 14 is actually an extremely good MMO by everybody's standards.
Now here's the thing. Final Fantasy 11 and Final Fantasy 14 are both MMOs, and I wonder if you really included... I guess if you're going to consider Final Fantasy Star Online, I guess you have to.
Yeah, and by all accounts, I hear people rave about Final Fantasy 14 all the time.
You know, the funny thing is that Final Fantasy XII people hated, you know, like a decade ago, and now they love it.
I don't feel like people hated it or loved it. I feel like it was just sort of lost in the shuffle.
Well, here, it was ahead of its time in terms of design. But they hated it. You know they hated it. It was coming off Final... Well, here's the thing. Final Fantasy X is divisive. So... And it was coming off Final Fantasy X. See, you said bad. I know some other people say it's good.
Final Fantasy X was pretty to look at, but it was very shallow. They had a lot of awkwardness about it when they were trying to execute, I guess, character emotions, and it just did not come across very well. I didn't relate to most of the characters. I didn't really care for them. I just felt bored with Final Fantasy X.
Also, it doesn't have an open world. Final Fantasy X is exactly what allowed for Final Fantasy XIII to happen. It's Corridor Walker JRPG. if you like Final Fantasy X, but you don't like Final Fantasy XIII, I would say that you're a fraud.
Well, it could be one story is bad, the other one is good.
Nah, I wouldn't say that. They're both bad.
Final Fantasy XIII stories, all three of them were bad. It wasn't enough that it was a corridor, but it was a boring corridor with characters I did not give two shits about.
You know how I said that Final Fantasy XV is Stand By Me, the Final Fantasy game? Final Fantasy X is Sixth Sense, the Final Fantasy game.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Final Fantasy XV is a boy band that you just want to shoot. Final Fantasy XV is that emo, like I said, that emo teen who wears all black and listens to Rage Against the Machine.
Yes, but those boys are all cool, and I like them.
They're
and
all they're fucking Marty Stews. Come on. What's his biggest problem? He's a prince who has everything he ever wanted, and he has his girlfriend and all that stuff, and the only thing bad that happens in his life is that his car breaks down.
Actually, the whole point of the game is that they teach him that he sucks and he can't do anything on his own. And that's what his friends are for.
Anyways, before I say we will see you next week, I just want to say someone beat a speedrunner did Untitled Goose Game in under 4 minutes.
Nice.
I don't know why anybody does speedrunning.
The challenge.
What? No, it's not even a challenge. Just enjoy the damn game. It's like, I could take a piss and he would have finished the game. Hey, I have to go take a piss. Okay. Oh, I'm back. What happened? Oh, I finished it. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
And don't take a piss while video gaming. That's a no-no.
Yeah.